Aloha, and welcome to In the Garden on the Farm, your weekly radio program that cultivates the passion and knowledge to grow well with plants and animals. We're your hosts, Robin and Paul, and on today's show, we'll reconsider the way we approach growing food with future-minded innovators here in Hawaii and abroad. Boost our well-being with a diminutive medicinal vine, very well-suited to aquatic culture, and appreciate the effect of silica on plant health and productivity. But first, we'd like to let you know that this KKCR program is made possible by listeners like you, in partnership with our fine sponsors, Harvest Market Natural Foods and Cafe, Kauai Marine and Mower, Anahola Stringed Instruments, and Edible Hawaiian Islands Magazine.
Harvest Market Natural Foods and Cafe in Hanalei is proud to support KKCR and its Ohana, offering organic groceries and produce, a cafe featuring fresh salad bar, hot meals and soups, fresh-made smoothies, and baked goods. Located in the heart of Hanalei, Harvest Market Natural Foods and Cafe, 826-0089.
Kauai Marine and Mower, located in Old Kapa'a Town, is proud to underwrite this KKCR program. Kauai Marine and Mower features Honda Garden and Lawn Equipment and also Echo Power Equipment. 823-0556.
Anahola Stringed Instruments is proud to support KKCR. Mickey Sussman has been building Island Koa guitars, ukulele, and violins on Kauai since 1972. Time-honored design and special orders. Prompt and complete restoration, repair, and reforestation. AnaholaStringedInstruments.com or 822-1645.
Edible Hawaiian Islands is a subscription-based, advertiser-supported print and digital magazine, the only James Beard Award-winning food and drink magazine in the state of Hawaii. Edible Hawaiian Islands digital magazine may be enjoyed at ediblehi.com.
That's my mic. There it is. Thank you so much to our wonderful underwriters, and you can join forces with us by visiting kkcr.org and leave a generous donation there. We're really excited to be bringing this show all about gardening and farming to you today to share our passion with you. Robin, it's great to see you.
It's really great to be here.
And we're joined in studio by a number of very beautiful people. So we're looking forward to a super packed, wonderful show. And we're going to get right to it so that we can bring it all to you right here at the top of the hour. We'll start with our celestial session, looking to the heavenly skies above for inspiration and guidance on our planting, harvesting, weeding, observing, and other gardening and farming activities that we do out there in the land. And in acknowledgement of the influences of the heavenly bodies, starting with the moon, the closest of the heavenly bodies and the one with the greatest influence on us here. And today's Hawaiian moon phase brought to us by a new calendar. Again, thank you so much to Robin for bringing to our attention the 2015 Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council Hawaiian Lunar Calendar. Not any newer than any other 2015 calendar, but new to our attention. So grateful for that. And thanks to the U.S. Naval Observatory for timings of risings and settings of the moon and the sun. Today's Hawaiian moon is called Mohalu, and this is in the second Anahulu, or Hawaiian moon week, called Poipoi, which is the rounding or full. Here we are now approaching the full moon. Beautiful light last night from the previous moon, but tonight's moon is Mohalu, which will rise over Kauai at 4:37 p.m. this afternoon. She'll reach her transit or highest point in the sky at 10:22 p.m., and we will see her set if we're awake at 4:10 a.m. tomorrow morning. Hopefully we'll be sleeping. 89% of the moon's beautiful face will be illuminated, and we have the full moon coming up this Saturday at 8:35 a.m. in the morning. Mohalu is the 12th day of the lunar month, and the first of the Kane Kapu, liked for planting flowers because it was believed that flowers would be round and perfect like the moon if planted on this night. Mohala means to open, unfold, as flowers, certainly an energy we love to have in the garden. And the planting recommendations for this particular moon, flowers.
Imagine.
And in addition to flowers, kalo and ipu, or gourds, are said to be especially productive and beautiful if planted on this moon. The influence of the moon beginning again when the moon rises this afternoon, just after 4:30 p.m.
Cool. And I did read also that melons, and that's why ipus are good, because of their round shape, that you get extra beautiful shape out of the plants that are planted on this day.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty cool.
Yes.
Well, in the biodynamic look at things, we are in the ascending moon, so not great planting time, which actually doesn't flow in that great with the week of the full moon here in Hawaii. That is a great planting time according to the Hawaiian calendar. But in the biodynamic way, we're going to be looking at doing harvesting and cuttings and pruning during this week that's coming up, starting today with the moon in Sagittarius, a fire sign, making it a good time to work with our fruit plants. So I don't know about you guys, but some of the mango trees just seem so heavily laden with fruit. And as this rain we've been getting is kind of causing some of them to split.
Avocados, too.
Mm-hmm.
Good to keep an eye on them.
Yeah. So great time during this fire sign to do some harvesting, because your fruits will keep longer and stay in better shape without rot spots and things like that.
We were discussing yesterday over at Akamai Backyard the potential benefit of pruning a heavily laden tree, even if the fruit isn't ripe, just to ease up some of the weight. Do you find yourself doing that, and under what circumstances, or how do you make that call?
You know, I normally haven't made that a practice, but this year I've seen several big, beautiful, full-grown, old-growth fruit trees bite it because they were so laden with fruit that they split. I mean, some of them right down the middle to basically kill the tree even. And so, yeah, that might be something we need to start looking at, is when the trees are so laden often. Of course, that's not a time we'd want to do pruning. But there's techniques out there that farmers use, say for a crop like longan, where when you have the rack of flowers, you would tip off the top third of it so that you'd have less longan on the rack, but each individual would be larger.
Ah.
And so that's a strategy that is used commonly in production farming, and we can practice that in our backyards as well. And then if you've ever seen a Meyer lemon in like painful almost fruit, the branches can hang almost to the ground. I've seen a lot of stuff split this summer, so it's a good time.
When I was in Thailand recently, I saw extensive use of prop sticks under longan branches to make sure that they didn't have to give up any of that fruit or damage the trees.
Yeah, we've made use of prop sticks on everything from avocados to mangoes this year, and they are helpful. But moving right along this week, because we have so much great stuff to talk about today, Thursday and Friday, the moon will enter Capricorn, an earth sign, so that's time to work with our root plants. Then Saturday, moon moves into Aquarius, which is an air sign, making it time to work with our flower plants. And I remind everybody, when this comes around, this is a great time to do cuttings or vegetative propagation. You get the highest quality cutting possible during the flower times in the ascending moon. Sunday, we've got an unproductive day. So given the heavy rains that have been happening, we've had quite a few days that no matter what the calendar says, there's just no work really being done out there. So maybe those will time out for us, and Sunday will be a nice day to take the day off. Monday and Tuesday next, moon in Pisces, a water sign, making it time to work with our leafy plants, and weather permitting, this might be a good time to do some pruning.
Awesome. Thanks so much for that, Robin.
Yeah.
So this week, or I should say this month, we've been focusing in on looking to the past, the present, and the future for solutions based on what we're facing these days, benefiting from so much agricultural experience from millennia of learning, but facing new challenges now. And Robin's going to take us into a bit of news that brings some attention to that. And then later on in the show, we're going to be looking at some solutions that can help us to hopefully leapfrog over some of the challenges we face.
Yes, we hope so, because I got some information from both the National Wildlife Foundation and also a web resource known as the Natural Resources Defense Council. And basically, these two groups, among many, many others, are looking at the thousands or even tens of thousands of acres or miles of natural ecosystems that are basically plowed over to create cropland. And that means native grasslands, forests, and other wild places, wetlands, are being plowed over to create cropland to feed our growing population, which doesn't seem like it's slowing up at all. And then, of course, there's the financial and environmental costs of shipping this produce that's produced to where people live, which is generally in the more populated areas or towns. And then basically what happens is the towns get so populated that urban sprawl starts to happen. And now the cropland that was kind of stolen away from the natural way of being becomes developed into more homes and sort of with... poor planning in towns and cities have created this major loss of cropland that surrounds the cities. And so,
we've seen this, as you say, this is happening globally, but this exactly explains the situation in Hawaii of what's occurred over time.
Yes, exactly. So we've taken beautiful land that was in natural, that was providing habitat for native birds and plants and insects and all that kind of stuff. And, I mean, on the mainland, it's the Dakotas, Nebraska, Minnesota, Iowa, Florida, California, Georgia. I mean, these places where you might not even think, I mean, thousands of acres are just altered into cropland, and then the cropland is promptly sold off to subdivisions. So where are we going to grow food? Where is it supposed to come from? And I think that this brings us to vertical farming is one of these new options, which we're going to get into as the show progresses here today. I'm really excited because with our population growing and our depleted farmland, we're not going to be able to feed all the people. So we've got some great innovative ideas to share with you on the show today of how we can grow more food in less space with less resources even. So high quality farmland, topsoil, soil isn't really involved in these ways of growing that we're going to be talking about today. And this could very well be the future of how we grow food. So I'm excited to take a good look at that.
Yeah. So before people think that we're considering or suggesting that all ways of agriculture should be abandoned except for these new ways, I think like so many things, it's not an either or, but it's about availing ourselves of all the options so that we can have a really diversified food system. And we don't want to put all our eggs in any one basket.
Exactly.
But it sure is exciting to have some new options and technologies available to us. Were there recommendations from NRDC or the other partner, this federal partner, in terms of this research and the light? In the light of this information, what should be done?
Not particular solutions. I mean, I think they do talk about alternative ways of farming and hydroponics, aeroponics, which we discussed earlier this year kind of jokingly on April 1st. But when I did a little more a closer look at that, there's actually people having really great success. Aeroponics is a little bit of a misnomer. There is water used. It's just in a mist form. It's much less water than even in a hydroponic system. And so, yeah, there are these ways. I think mainly it's about transportation. I mean, there's lots of people in cities, so it's pretty cool when the food can be produced right there.
Uh-huh.
In blocks away.
And we're going to get to all that coming up really soon.
Yeah.
Right now, though, we're going to jump into the medicine chest before we do, and we're going to focus in on a plant that we've had a little bit of personal experience with here in Hawaii. Thanks again to Rick Ocheck and Horizon Herbs for making so many amazing medicinal herb plants in either seed or cutting form. Certainly easier to get the seeds here in Hawaii than bringing in live plants, but superb resource, in my opinion, is Horizon Herbs. And this next plant is one that the seeds indeed were sourced from Rico and his family. And we're talking right now about an Asian medicinal plant called Jiaogulan. The botanical name is Gynostemma pentaphyllum, and it is a sweet little herb that, gosh, looks a lot like bitter melon, really, and indeed it is related to bitter melon, and it seems like a plant that you've kind of seen before. It just kind of looks like a weedy vine. It just has this familiar kind of a look and a feel to it. It kind of blends right in, but boy, does this plant pack some pretty amazing powers.
If I were going to guess, based on its Latin name, pentafolia, I bet it has five parts of its leaf.
I would imagine.
Yes.
Yes, indeed. Although I'm sure leaves of different ages and sizes might have a few more, or rather to say less, but in general, I do believe it has five, it has a palmate leaf with five separate sections to it, fingers, if you will. And have you seen this plant growing?
Well, you know, Paul, you gave me a few specimens a couple of years ago when
That's
you were
right.
really hip on growing it, and
yeah.
it grew very poorly in my garden. It did not grow well. I had dreams of getting some seeds from it anyway, but yeah. being a dioecious plant, and I only had two, and it didn't look to me like I had one boy and one girl,
right.
And the plants did wither, unfortunately. But you had much greater success, so I'm excited to hear what you have to say about it.
Sure. So as Robin said, this is a dioecious plant, which means there's separate male and female plants. And this is a strategy that certain plant species use to ensure for cross-pollination and ensure, just as humans have separate male and female individuals, to make sure that we have that mixing of genes to keep the population strong. It's a vine that's native to various parts of Asia. And this plant is, just to go into some of its qualities, it shares some of the same active constituents with Asian ginseng, the botanical name Panax ginseng. This has led to it being identified as an herb with adaptogenic properties, meaning that it helps the body maintain homeostasis under stress. Other adaptogenic herbs include ashwagandha, cordyceps fungus, Codnopsis and licorice root, as well as schizandra berries. These are all plants that I've discovered decades ago in the dried herb section at the health food store and was putting into soups and, you know, winter time and just trying to boost that immunity kind of thing. So I had a lot of fun incorporating those things, but I certainly never discovered Jiao Gulan. Now, Jiao Gulan is also called poor man's ginseng. The thing about ginseng is it's a high elevation herb that takes several years to actually build up the medicinal strength. If you think about kava root, it takes some time. You can't harvest it right away. Whereas Jiao Gulan, it's the leaf, not the root, like so many of these other adaptogenic herbs that is harvested. And it's a same, you know, one season. It is often grown as an annual plant. It can be sparingly or short-lived perennial as well. But it's got that strength without having to wait so long. And a better choice for us in the lowlands, too, ginsengs are high-elevation plant, whereas Jiao Gulan is also a high-elevation plant. In its native range, it's found between around 1,000 to 10,000 feet elevation.
Wow. So it likes it cooler.
It likes it cooler. And so I had a similar experience as you, Robin, that it particularly did not like to grow in the garden setting. And we gave it compost, and it had full sun and a trellis and just really, you know, maybe I babied it too much, but I really tried. And I actually planted it in a couple of locations. Just could not find a place it wanted to grow. However, it did get planted in the aquaponics system at KCC, and it grew like gangbusters. It was a huge carpet, and, I mean, just 20 times the growth as the garden setting. So I don't know if it was that the roots stayed cool in the water or it just had access to all the nutrients that it needed, but it was very happy. And so if I know that we have a number of people now here on Kauai that have aquaponic systems, which have been very popular, and with the advent of more other aquatic systems like the one you're going to hear about in our next segment coming popping up all over, this could be an exciting plant, medicinal plant that people could grow with ease in their own backyard.
Yeah, and you know, we're always talking about entrepreneurial ideas here on our little island. I mean, seems to me when you find something that people really want, then you can find a way to produce it. You got a little something going on there. And this, to me, seems like knowing the people on Kauai that we're interested in health and healthy things. And if it could be that this could grow in aquaponics that well here to the point that we would have lots of jiao gulan on Kauai, and I can just envision our whole population getting healthier and finding new ways to use it in all of our foods. And
it's thought to be a longevity herb as well, so we'll stick around for a while, which would be nice. Now, one thing that's not known, and I hadn't actually mentioned how it's used, so it's dried and a tea is made from the leaf. It's very flavorful. It just is a really good-feeling tea. I would compare it with mamaki, not that it tastes the same, but it's a tonic kind of, it gives you that sense of that you're just consuming something that's good for you and it's refreshing. So it's very pleasant to consume. And one thing that's not known, though, is because it is a high-elevation plant, is jiao gulan that is grown at low elevation, would it actually have the same medicinal strength as the high-elevation plant? And so that could only be learned through phytochemical analysis in the lab. Luckily enough, there is a lab of that description at Windward Community College. And I don't have the name of the professor, but they've done some tremendous phytochemical research there at UH. And this, I think, would be an excellent candidate herb for them to do some research for us. So maybe we could make that link as well.
Far out.
Yeah, so this is In the Garden on the Farm on Kauai Community Radio. And you're here with your hosts, Robin and Paul. We're here to discuss the future dimensions of agriculture, farming, and gardening. And we're going to start in at the home level. We know we have a lot of home gardeners who listen to the show. And actually, Robin, you were mentioning that we have listeners, or you were told recently that there's plenty of people who listen to our show who don't even garden, but they enjoy the show. Maybe that wasn't you who told me that. But the point being, there's people who'd like to start gardening, but they know it's a lot of work. They know that there's a lot of challenge to it, and maybe they want an easier way to step in, or maybe they've done the hard part and they're looking to continue to eat healthy and fresh food, but they want a little bit of an easier way to do it.
Yes, I would say I even want an easier way to do it, personally.
Indeed. So to that tune, I want to introduce our in-studio guest this week, James Brake of GrowBot. James is the creator and director of product and technical implementation of GrowBot, an innovative home-scale hydroponic garden robot that uses plant recognition technology and artificial intelligence to help all of us grow fresh, organic food easily. GrowBot's mission is to ensure that every human has access to real, affordable food. James lives with his family right here in Princeville, a stone's throw away from the KKCR studios. James, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
It's super to have you in, and we were lucky enough to visit your home and visit the GrowBot just about an hour ago. It's super cool to see it in person, although we also saw it on the Indiegogo website where you're currently running a campaign to fund the production of the system.
That's right. Thank you so much for coming by.
Yeah. So great to see it, and I have to say it was great to meet your family a year and a half ago when you guys had a community garden plot there in Kalihiwai. And I thought you told the story so well in that short video on the Indiegogo site about GrowBot, about your experience gardening. It was very humorous about all the work you put in, and it's amazing how fast the weeds grow, and it can be a somewhat frustrating experience trying to get the family's food out of a small plot.
We did amazingly well, though. I was really happy with the support of the people at Malama Kauai, and as you saw, we had a very healthy amount of kale and chard and that kind of cabbage that would grow straight up and stuff. So we thought it was a fantastic experience. So it was just a little bit hard for us.
Yes. And so you have been a inventor. You've been a developer and designer of technology for a while, and it seems like you've combined your love of eating healthy, fresh food with your scientific background to develop this garden robot?
Yeah, it took a little while to get it all together. But, you know, just trial and error, as you saw in the backyard, we had various versions of the robot back there. And, you just keep on trying, and eventually you get to where something's actually working the way that you kind of dreamed it would.
Yeah,
you know, I find it interesting because I know that people who are cooks or chefs, they have a passion for food, and so they also tend to be gardeners. But I like it that you are a tech guy who has a passion for food, and so you've taken your tech experience and brought it to the garden. It's a really beautiful marriage of technology and garden right there.
Well, Robin, I could not have done that, I don't think, without all of your help and so many of your starts that I got from you. So that was most of what was at Malama Kauai was the starts from Robin. So it's been a teamwork between all of us, I think, in making this actually all happen, because you guys built my confidence to actually grow a garden. And then, of course, I just realized how much at work it was and then considered just, how do we automate this?
Yeah.
Sure. Well, let's let our listeners know, do we have the photo on Facebook? Is that up there?
We were having some technical difficulties, but we're going to try to get a snapshot of us standing in front of the GrowBot just an hour ago there at James's home/workshop, where we got to see various versions of the GrowBot, and it's cool, and it reminded me of that great little film that's on Netflix right now about the 3D printers. And one of the startup companies called MakerBot, and it showed you some of their original prototypes. And I just kind of felt like, wow, I'm at the beginning of this. You know, this is going to be huge. And here we are at the very beginning stages and the first few versions of a technology that just has so much application for home, for schools, for restaurants. Hydroponics is kind of like a no muss, no fuss way of being able to grow food without tracking a bunch of mud into the house. Or it's just it's a really good solution for a lot of people in a lot of different areas.
Yeah, and it's light on the resources. So while we're talking about it, I guess what was on my mind is just letting people get a look at what we're actually talking about here on the radio right now. So people could check out GrowBot. .com, is that correct?
MyGrowBot.com.
MyGrowBot.com. If you want to, if you're interested in seeing what we're talking about right now in this red hot moment, you could check it out. But we do want you to kind of describe the system a little bit.
Absolutely.
And certainly, if you want to go into any more about how you decided to develop it.
So the GrowBot is a lot of desire about having really healthy organic food, very convenient to our home. And, you know, a lot of people, we tried gardening and then, had some success with that. And then later on, though, when we had some trial and error, we built a larger version of back in California that my wife, she said, make it smaller. And so we actually I have pictures of this old one, which was about the size of a small room. and then we made it smaller, and then people started giving me more feedback on it, and then more trial and error until we got it down to where it is now. It's about 52 plants that just sit in what they call a Dutch bucket method, or just sitting in water, the roots. And those will grow a tremendous amount of lettuce and chard and other types of vegetables, as well as like cucumbers and tomatoes and stuff, really flourish well inside there. But not all plants flourish just in water. Some, like kale, they really like to have their roots stuck in something. And so for that, we did the perlite. And so that when you put that in, strawberries are a similar sort of thing. They don't like just water. They like the roots stuck in something. So they also flourish well in the perlite. So we actually have the GrowBot will support both because, well, we like strawberries, we like kale, and we like lettuce, and we like tomatoes, and we like cucumbers, as well as eggplants and lots of other things.
Uh-huh.
And so just one GrowBot that can hold about 70 plants on average, and it's just in the size of like a coffee table. It's like 2.5 feet by not quite 4 feet, so it's really compact. We made it so it kind of fits my lifestyle of not doing much as possible. So it's automated. It will water itself. It will feed itself, and it has a what they call an artificial intelligence that will allow it to basically learn what you're growing and make sure that it's growing properly. You can even look for things like pest and disease and make suggestions about moving plants around to leverage things like permaculture, which are a fantastic knowledge to have to work with. And, you know, it's been a lot of teamwork. So it's a lot of amazing input by some incredibly intelligent and knowledgeable people have been helping this project along.
Well, you know, I love that idea, but can you go into a little more detail about artificial and the artificial intelligence?
The brain,
as you called it.
Okay. Well, the brain's actually is kind of like two parts. The brain that's actually on the GrowBot itself is it's sort of like a mimic, and what it does is we can teach it these how to recognize its plants and actually how to apply that plant to various databases that it might have or has. And so it'll recognize something like bok choy. It'll recognize something like baby bok choy and recognize mature bok choy, and it'll know how much to feed that. And it can see the various plants inside your GrowBot. And how it actually learns that is actually by a bigger computer that we have in California. I have a whole big stack of them, been in software forever. And so you accumulate stuff over time. And this big stack of computers, basically if a GrowBot sees a plant that it doesn't recognize, it's like, what is that? It'll just send the picture up to our computers in California. And then when we get enough of those and we have a professional team that will look at those pictures and decide, okay, well, that happens to be baby, was that Gailan?
Jiaogulan.
Well, then eventually we'll recognize what that is. And then all of a sudden, it's really like Keanu Reeves in that show, The Matrix, where he all of a sudden, like, new kung fu. Your GrowBot will all of a sudden know Jiaogulan.
Mm-hmm.
That's way cool. And then it's, in addition, the system is linked to your smartphone so that you can see pictures,
yeah.
You can check in on your garden when you're not home and that kind of thing?
It is. And so what that does is the GrowBot's meant to improve the quality of your life. It's going to save you money, right? It's going to give you high-quality food, and it's going to do that without also making you stressed out. So instead of you having to go and look at the GrowBot, you know, a couple times a day you'll get a little picture from your GrowBot if you want it to. You don't have to. But it'll show you what's growing. And as its intelligence increases, it will actually give you a little dial in. You can actually see how much lettuce you have there, how much kale you have there, how much various fruits and vegetables that you have growing and are ready to pick. And then, you know, presumably if we can get the community to work with us, then there'll be other people who will come up and say, well, we can make a salad from that, or we can make, like, some other nice dish. So it'll basically really help out people that are busy. And then also people that are just trying to save some money on really good high-quality food.
Sure. So the essential piece is that there's this little waterproof camera on there, right, that on the GrowBot that's taking pictures.
That's right.
Of the plants as they're growing. And you said how often were those photos?
Right now it's about every 6 hours. As GrowBot kind of grows up, it'll actually be adjusting itself. One of the things we've learned recently is that during these high heat days, it needs to be awake a little bit more to top off the water.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Awesome. So you're talking organic and wondering, what is the GrowBot feeding plants?
Okay, so it's actually feeding it something that's really, really similar to what you get inside dirt. So when soil breaks down through basically a bacteria microbial process, it basically comes a tea. And so what we're presently feeding the GrowBot is tea. We're not actually feeding it a regular fertilizer just because, you know, we've got a family and I don't ever trust all the things in those bags. So what we're feeding it is a tea that's made from seaweed and bird guano and then a little bit of humic acid that's been harvested from leonardite.
Mm-hmm. Far out.
And that is a silica-based product, is it not, from leonardite?
I don't know.
Okay. Well, we're going to talk about silica, and I know you were mentioning
yes.
that you do use that in your system. So we'll be talking about that later in the show. But just want to let people know we're speaking with James Brake. He's the inventor, developer, and emissary of the GrowBot. And more information can be found at mygrowbot.com, an innovative hydroponic system that uses artificial intelligence and a lot of automation, so that you can just show up at dinner time and the robot's grown the food for you, which is pretty super cool. But I love the fact that there's still that human interaction, and in the video it shows you planting the seed in the cup.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, that the fact that that portion of the experience is not taken away, that you're still having that relationship with the plant is really cool. I like that a lot.
Good. Yeah, it's I don't know. It's for me, like, there's the technology aspects of it. There's a very spiritual thing about growing. You know, when you have a GrowBot, I go out and look at the little cups, little germination cups, on a regular basis just to see the plants come to life. You know, I go and I check on it on a regular basis just because I love to give it that love and nurturing that plants, I think, especially the ones that nourish us, just kind of need. And I think that a lot of people that grow gardens, that's part of what gardening is just this, you know, this love of life and living.
No doubt. So I have one last one question is, how's the flavor? How's the flavor of stuff? Do you find that in the hydroponic type system that your flavors are all right there?
I've been through quite a few different types of way of giving the GrowBot nutrients. What we're feeding it right now has got amazing flavor, really,
yes,
really good. But we've had things that were, like what people have noticed also, a little bit bland. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's kind
of
like what you put in is what you get out. And so this particular tea costs a little bit more than average, but what you put in is what you get out.
Sure. And so, yeah, the nutrient levels are what's going to be creating those flavonoids. And each individual mm-hmm. person who has their GrowBot can tailor their own nutrient mix to themselves as well, correct?
Yeah, and that's one of the kind of the more cool things about it is that as we get more knowledge and more people are using the GrowBot, there's going to be it's a GrowBot's a platform. It's not just a machine. It allows people to, if you have an idea or you've got something that you discovered, you can actually reach out to the entire GrowBot community and sell it to them or give it to them and share it with them. It's GrowBot's going to be successful not because, oh, it's a great invention. So GrowBot would be successful because as a community we want it to happen. And it's about having people interact. It's about having great people who want to have seed starts. It's about great people that have made incredible teas that have awesome seeds that will provide extra service for people that are really busy but still want to have a GrowBot. It's going to be a community success story, not just a machine.
It's a beautiful vision. Well, right now we're going to expand our vision by welcoming a couple of guests on the line. We're joined by Lee Weingrad and Jack Griffin of Metropolis Farms. Are you guys with us?
Yeah,
hey, we're here.
Fantastic. So Lee, Vice President of Operations of Metropolis Farms, he's an urban vertical indoor farm, which is a vertical urban indoor farm located in Philadelphia. It's poised to pop up in multiple metropolitan cities in the northeastern U.S., Lee, with 15 years of indoor growing experience, Jack bringing 25 years experience in venture capital and merchant banking to the equation, as well as being a former research scientist. Sounds like a great combination, you guys. Both are committed to advancing the art of what they call revolution farming technology, which they currently deploy as a sustainable, cost-effective indoor farming system that makes locally grown food a reality for people in even the largest cities on Earth. Welcome to the show. It's great to have you.
Thank you.
Yeah. So vertical indoor farming from here in pastoral Kauai seems like a very futuristic solution. But every now and again, we do travel. We do cast our sights to family and friends who live in metropolitan areas. And it is kind of sobering to think about how far away these cities are from the food-producing regions that supply them with their daily bread. So you guys have really come up with a very innovative, forward-thinking, and present-acting system, and we'd love to hear about it.
Lee, you want to talk about it for a bit?
Yes, please.
Go ahead, you start. Okay, Essentially, I mean, vertical farming has been around since Babylon, but really in the last 10 years, the concept has reached a point where, you know, a bunch of folks have tried this. I mean, there are currently four companies claiming to be the largest vertical farms in the world or are going to build the largest vertical farms. But it's essentially been at the hobby level. And our goal was to build something that would you take it from the hobbyist level and the nascent business level to actually a scalable technology that could grow food in local communities, provide local jobs. I mean, if you look into the Philadelphia area, You put a pin in Philadelphia, you drive 1 hour around Philadelphia, you have 6.5 million people. We all have one thing in common. We all eat. We also have another thing in common. The vast majority of our food comes from at least 3,000 miles away most of the year. That's kind of crazy. You know, the farming system that we have in our country, and I know that Hawaii has a similar issue, you know, as a state, in it, you know, the vast majority of your food, I'm told, comes from California.
Shocking, but true.
Going through a water crisis.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, you know, that's tough. You know, wouldn't it be nicer to be able to grow it locally, and to be able to keep those, not just from a health perspective, because let's face it, in the drive for the food, 60 to 70% of the nutritional value leaves the food, whereas we're able to harvest and deliver the same day. You know, what we've done is we've created a technology that goes up and utilizes the indoor spaces that are throughout the East Coast or throughout the country, for that matter. You know, if you give you some idea, within a 36 square foot space, we can grow the equivalent yearly produce of an acre outdoors.
Wow.
You know, toe for toe.
Wow.
It's pretty, you know.
Because you're going how high up in that 36 square foot space?
I'm just doing that in four spaces. In other words, four racks.
16
feet. I can
feet.
Certainly go much higher. 16 feet. Yeah, I can go much higher than that.
Wow. Outrageous.
You know, the intent with the Philadelphia project was to do a couple of firsts. We're the first vertical farm in the history of Philadelphia. We're also the first vertical farm in the world ever built on anything other than a first floor. As an engineering feat, I wanted to prove that we could use spaces that other people were leaving empty because they had no value. You know, I don't know what real estate costs in Hawaii. I'm told it's very high, but I'm getting real estate here in a major metropolitan area for 72 cents a square foot, and I'm realizing a significant profit from that same space.
Right.
You know, and profit's important because when people see a profit, they spend their time and efforts trying to make it better. You know, that hopefully will get this to a point where you'll start to see more and more of these farms, and we'll see artisan farmers returning to cities, you know, which is what we're hoping for.
Yeah, you know, I really love the flash farm concept, because when you look at a big system or a big project, you know, where you're looking on a huge scale, it can be a little bit intimidating, but I really love those small space and small systems that you're talking about on your website.
Yeah, you stay local. You stay closer to the customer. You know, we've had folks come as far as Moscow in the Middle East with an interest in looking at this, and you know, they're trying to talk me into coming to Moscow to do a farm. I just a hint, I would much rather be in Hawaii doing that. from my perspective, we want to work with the local community. You know, you want to stay close to your customer. You want to avoid large chain logistics, and you know, there's no point in replicating a broken farming system. You know, you really think about it, our farming system is an offshoot of an 18th century tech, you know, 19th century technology, trains. We moved farther and farther away. Then we got refrigeration, and we moved even farther. Then trucks, and now here we are, where our supply chain is so long, it's not really good for us. You know, fortunately, the technology has now gotten to a point where we can start bringing it back in and at least supplying some of our foods locally. I mean, I think, you know, we've all seen enough movies where New York runs out of food and, you know, and all the mayhem ensues after that. You know, imagine it from a security issue as well. What would happen if California, you know, if they don't solve the water crisis in California, what's going to happen?
Yeah,
you know,
good
how
question.
How are we going with that? Does anybody have a plan?
So can you tell us about, in your vertical farming system, how you save resources such as water? You use so much less than in a traditional growing situation. And also, would you be willing to talk a little bit about your nutrient solution? There must be some kind of nutrients that you're feeding the plants, and I'm curious if it's organically minded or if it relies on other kinds of plant foods like Hoagland solution or something like that.
Well, we use a chelated mineral solution, which means that, and it's a fundamental disagreement that I have. I happen to think that the way we do it is better. I'm sure there are a million people who will debate me on that, but I'm pretty sure they'd lose the debate. We use chelated minerals, which means that the minerals have an amino acid attached to them, and we use a process which is proprietary to attach those minerals. The fundamental difference between us and organic is number one that, and number two, and I think this is an important difference, we use no manure whatsoever. And, you know, people forget, and you know, organic honestly is safer from a manure perspective than most farming, as I'm sure everybody on this call knows. But manure is the number one, I mean, leafy green vegetables and manure are the number one cause of food poisoning in the United States. You know, organic at least has to use composted manure. We don't. We don't use any manure whatsoever. In fact, we've had extensive conversations with groups about vegan certification based on this, because we use no animal byproducts whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
We've gone through every nutrient that we use and every possible nutrient, and you'd be amazed, you know, geez, I want to get some muriatic acid because muriatic acid has a great chelating effect on, you find that unless you get pure muriatic acid, you're going to wind up dealing with, I don't want to name the name of the product, but bird poop.
Thank you.
And fish guts.
That works.
And fish guts. You know, I won't mention their names, but bird poop and fish guts. I don't think I need those.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't think they had. I'm much happier using a cold pressed seaweed.
Yes.
And getting the same effect, you know?
Sure. The reason I asked is just from a flavor perspective. We were just talking with our GrowBot creator here in the studio on the show. I don't know if you guys were tuned in and listening to us before you called us, but
right.
We were talking about flavor profiles and how the nutrient solutions have so much to do with how the vegetables taste and, they're palatable. And I imagine in cities like where you guys are, you're working with chefs, and chefs are notable for wanting the best flavor in everything. And that's kind of where I was coming from when I asked you that question.
You know, if you really want to break it down to the core science, what you're finding is that taste is a function of carbohydrate. Carbohydrate is a function of health in a plant. You know, when you use a refractive meter on a plant, I mean, bring into some very well-known health supermarket chains. We've gone in and, for example, gone in and tested their produce. And it's really not a fair test because, let's be honest, their stuff is going to be 2 to 3 weeks old by the time it hits a shelf in Philadelphia.
Right.
Our stuff is measured in minutes. So on a brick scale, they're scoring a 5. On the same brick scale, we're scoring a 12. I mean, it's an unfair test from that perspective, but it's a strategic advantage that we have. You know, it tastes better when it's fresh.
No doubt. No doubt about that. I think we'd all agree on that fact.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, you know, yes, you can do some unique things because when you're feeding the plant an optimum diet and you're giving it exactly what it needs in terms of optimum light, optimum hydration, optimum oxygen content in the water. You wind up with a healthier plant. It doesn't have to invest its energy into surviving. It invests its energy in growing to be a more lush plant. You know, and that's at least that's what we found. You know, if you look at a typical seed catalog, you'll see that basil, they're going to say it's going to take between 60 to 75 days to grow a basil plant. I'm looking at Thai basil right now. I think we sent you a picture of it the other day. That was, I believe, 16 days old. Mm. We'll be ready to sell it in a week.
Yes.
Not even. I think 3 or 4 days. Yeah.
You really think? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Amazing.
You know, and then you get into really flavorful things. Like, we brought this thing from London. Have you ever had wasabi arugula?
Wasabi arugula? No, I haven't tried that one yet.
Awesome. Oh, man, we'll Federal Express you some. we're growing a new batch now. We just grew it for chefs, and the local chefs start. It's awesome. But really, you can even eat the flowers. The flowers also have the flavor.
I think I saw that in a seed catalog this year. We're all big gardeners here that you're talking to right now.
Gotta try that one
for sure.
Awesome.
It's got that sweet taste that wasabi has in the beginning, and then it finishes with the heat.
Awesome.
Really, really good. We've had chefs actually doing recipes, local chefs, on the basis of it. And the funny part was that we got a demand for it that we actually weren't ready for, which is really not what we try to do. You know, one of the biggest advantages that we have, remember, we're growing every month. So we can grow against cycle. So So if something is just not available outdoors, we have it. We also don't depress what other people are growing at the same time, which is kind of nice.
Yeah, can you say that last thought again? We had a cut out on the phone.
We don't depress local markets. We don't depress local markets.
I see.
In other words, generally speaking, if you're growing outdoors, you know, you're praying for good weather, you're praying for, you know, that the bugs leave you alone. You're praying that all the stars come into alignment at the same time. You know, growing in an indoor environment, we remove a lot of the risks. We use zero pesticides, none whatsoever. We need zero herbicides. Our pesticide plant in here, believe it or not, is carnivorous plants.
Yeah.
That takes care of everything we have.
Fantastic. I've seen that work to effect in botanical garden greenhouses. It's a super solution. Mm-hmm. So we want to let people know we're speaking with Lee and Jack of Metropolis Farms, located in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. They have a really exciting vertical farming project that it just seems like it's poised to take metropolitan areas by storm. And I'd love to hear from Jack about some of the developments in terms of expanding the business beyond Philadelphia and even within the Philadelphia market.
Well, our first goal is to finish the farm that we have in Philadelphia, which we're in the process of doing. I and my partners run a merchant bank, actually in the Trump building, on Wall Street. And this was a project that was really close to me. I saw it a couple of years ago. It just wasn't ready at the time. The folks involved in it were, you know, I mean, they were nice people, don't get me wrong, but they didn't have what it would take to scale this up. I kept looking at it and tinkering with it. And earlier this year, you know, with a lot of arm twisting, I got my partners to agree that I'm going to come out here. I'm going to make this work. And so as of January of this year, we built this farm, put out a private placement. So we're raising the capital, which is what we do professionally. So that's, you know, I mean, that's one advantage that we have. So that, you know, it's not a hard thing for us to do. Once the Philadelphia farm, we're in the process of talking to folks from multiple countries that are interested in this. But I'm most interested in doing this in the United States. I'm most interested in the fact that we have other groups that are interested in working with us, you know, doing joint ventures. We're looking at, believe it or not, a kosher version of this in the New York area right now, where we would essentially build a clean room around it. And, geez, if you can remove particulate matter to the 1/100th of a percent, you can certainly keep bugs out. So we're looking at that. We're looking at a large tomato production facility right now as well with another supermarket. We've just recently begun working with Whole Foods, and that's very exciting for us. It's a lot of validation for us.
Awesome.
So we're looking at that. In the Philadelphia area, for example, you know, there's 6.5 million people within a one-hour drive. We could easily build 10 flash farms locally surrounding specific or working within specific communities. You put that same pin in New York, you're dealing with 22 million people within, you know, and so we're looking at that area as well. My first three goals are Philadelphia, New York, Washington, D.C. I've got some very dear friends that want me to do this in Las Vegas. You've got 14 of the 15 largest hotels in the world. And like Hawaii, they've got, you know, not the locals as much as, geez, you've got such a huge tourist industry. You've got to keep fresh produce there at all times.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, you know, open to what works, on this. And, you know, I think that this is an idea that needs to be expanded by being as inclusive as possible. The last thing in the world, we're never coming to... It's a different corporate culture where we're never coming to an area and saying, no, we got this.
Right.
We want to work with the folks in that particular community. And we've had a very, very warm reception with regard to that.
Well, that's smart business for sure, you guys. And I think as all of us being food lovers, whether we're home gardeners, farmers, backyard growers, regardless of what we grow, we wind up getting food from all over. You know, even if we have a beautiful garden, we're probably eating food from a friend's garden. We go to the farmer's market. We go to the store to get certain things we can't grow here. And it's not an either-or situation. It's about having the diversity. And
right.
just to, as an to give people a little bit more of an idea of, could you, because you've mentioned a few of the vegetables, but what would be a good idea of the range of kinds of foods? Because certainly there's some kinds of foods that wouldn't grow in a hydroponic system indoors, but what's a range of the kinds of foods you guys are growing or are looking at growing?
We're very much a hybridization. We're not a true hydroponic. But the things we can't grow trees because it would be stupid. We'd just, you know, they're too tall. So that leaves almonds and things like that out. We cannot grow, can't grow grains, can't grow funguses. But basically, I mean, the easiest thing in the world for us to grow is anything that's leafy and green. Flowering plants, right now we're running trials. I've run trials, with, tomatoes, peppers, Persian cucumbers. They've all been successful. My biggest challenge with tomatoes is that the tomatoes are too large. And you were talking about flavors. You know, you have an opportunity to affect the flavor of a tomato when you're in a water-based system. You know, we don't grow the tomato. A rooting plant, we use a DWC type tray versus the low tide trays. And you know, we like a tomato, like a determinative tomato that's going to give all its fruit at once. And then replace it with a new tomato versus try to regenerate it.
Right.
Turn that into compost, you know?
Absolutely. How about tubers? Do you guys have any luck with tubers like potatoes? Or I know here in the tropics, they grow ginger and turmeric to great effect in hydroponic systems.
Funny you mention that. What we did do is we've done Parisian carrots, and they were delicious. But it was kind of like, can you do that? Yeah, let's try it. You know, I mean, we were able to go to those really diminutive carrots. So we can do them. You know, one of the challenges with this is you've really got to do a business case.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you had the big problem with the Mexican cilantro, perfect example. And everybody said, geez, grow cilantro. Well, even at $40 a case, because it more than doubled in price, because of the ban, more than doubled in price, it still wasn't a profitable crop when compared to our other crops. So you kind of got to still pick your spots. I'll tell you one that I really like growing is strawberries, because we're able to grow the old-fashioned strawberries that we all grew up on that disappeared a couple years ago. You know, we're able to grow, you know, you cut a strawberry in half today, and it's really an everberry, and it's got that white center part.
Yes.
Our strawberries are red all the way through, and, you know, the wholesalers, which, by the way, we don't use wholesalers right now, they don't like that because it's got too much sugar in it, and it doesn't last as long. But our answer to that is we deliver it within an hour.
Awesome. Well, guys, I'm sorry to cut our conversation short. It's been super to talk to you and get introduced to your vertical farming concepts and your application. You guys are hot on it. And it's really exciting. I want to let people know for more information, they can go to metropolisfarmsusa.com for more information. You guys have a great Facebook page as well, and it's a great place to see some of the production photos of your system. And Lee and Jack, thanks so much for reaching out to us. It was great to know, Lee, that you visited Kauai recently, and you guys are keeping us in mind of how you can help us solve some of our food supply issues, because we do still import almost 90% of the food here into Hawaii. So great to know that you guys are thinking about how to solve that problem with us.
Oh, I guess they're gone.
All right. Well, thank you so much, you guys. And with just a few minutes left in the show, we do want to follow through with talking a bit about silica. And this is this was actually inspired by James telling me that he's using it as a booster in his GrowBot system in terms of providing some resistance for your plants under adverse conditions. Can you tell us a little bit more about that, James?
Yeah, Paul. So what happens is that, you know, the kale especially just needs a little extra silica when it gets hot. And that what that silica does is it, it's what I was told at least, was that it allows the cell walls to expand and absorb more water. So when you have a really hot day, the plant is actually, since it has like the ability to have more water inside there as it transpirates all the water out of itself, it has more to be there. And what we've seen is that as long as we, about once or twice a week during the hotter part of the year, just give it literally like a milliliter, like per gallon of water, that's plenty. And it also seems to make the leaves more crisp at the same time, which is nice.
Yeah, it stiffens them a little bit, makes mm-hmm. them crunchy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a really nice effect. And we also do a little bit of, I also add a little bit of calcium magnesium, which helps delay the leaves to really fill out.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
Yeah, no doubt.
Well, silica deficient in our soils due to high rainfall, certainly in our prime croplands where sugarcane was planted over decades. I know that that's been sopped up by the sugarcane. Certain plant families preferring silica to others, but certainly the grass family and monocots in general depend more on silica than plants, dicotyledonous plants.
Mm-hmm.
But within the dicots, members of the cucurbit family particularly prefer, and it's been shown that silica can help our squash to avoid powdery mildew problems. And certainly in sugarcane production, it was shown that calcium silicate could massively increase yields, but at the time thought to be economically unfeasible to bring in that particular nutrient, which is a byproduct of a mining industry. I don't know, we get so many of our minerals from mining, but somehow it seemed to be prohibitive at that time. But another plant family, the Cannabaceae family, is also benefits or uptakes more silica than some plant families. That includes cannabis marijuana or the hemp plant. And so this is why we see, I think, various silica products excellent for hydroponic use, like systems like the GrowBot. That's why we see a lot of silica products, because the cannabis plant utilizes silica to such effect.
Sure, and you know, one of the ways I like to get silica into my garden beds is by mulching them with wheat straw, and that is one of those grasses that uptakes a lot of silica, and certainly it's imported here, but when I cover my beds with that, some of that silica does leach down into the soil and is providing that necessary nutrient. And another way to get silica to our plants is through biodynamic preparations, silica, and that one is in particular, it brings more light. It reflects light, as silica being kind of a crystalline type of molecule, and helps keep those nasty funguses off of our plants, which just want to, on wrapping up our show here, note this rainy weather, hot sun, it's kind of a petri dish out there in a really big way.
Sure.
And you want to be watching out for your funguses right now. A lot of extra water coming out of the sky, and that warm, moist weather just seems to breed stuff.
Right. Just a few last benefits of silica to our plants: improving nutrient and water transport within the plant, improving micronutrient uptake, increasing the CEC, and increasing cell wall strength, conferring insect and disease resistance, helping to alleviate metal toxicity, specifically manganese and aluminum, which we face in Hawaii's soils. So we'll be looking at solutions to bring more silica into our soils if we can. And if you have any good ideas, you can email them to inthegardenonthefarm@gmail.com. We're straight out of time. We want to tell you to stay tuned for Kauai Vibrations with Tracy. She's in the studio right now. And Robin.
This has been In the Garden on the Farm with your hosts, Robin and Paul. We ask you to tune in again next week for more stimulating conversation on our relationship with the life of the land that gives us life.
Aloha.
Aloha.
This is KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, K224 CQ Anahola, K284 AL Haleiwa.